were open. He breathed fiercely through his nose. Pritchard, with his eye at the door, was overcome with loneliness. He felt that he had never loved, and that no soul had ever loved him. He shut the door as softly as he could, and padded down the stairs.
"May I interject to ask a question?"
"Yes, of course."
"Can you show me exactly how Miss Wetherill was holding the pistol?"
"Certainly. Like this, with the heel of her hand right here. I was standing at an angle to her, about where Mr. Mannering is sitting now in relation to me, and her body was half turned like this.
And if the gun had fired as expected, what kind of injury would Miss Wetherill likely have sustained?"
"If she was lucky, a flesh wound in the shoulder. If she was unlucky, well, perhaps a little lower. Her heart, maybe. The left side. The truly curious thing, of course, is even if the cartridge was a blank, she still should have been impacted by the empty casing, or burnt by the powder, or seared at the very least. We couldn't make heads or tails of it. Thank you, I'm sorry to interrupt."
"Is there something you can share with us, Mr. Moody?"
"Presently I will, when I've heard the rest of the story."
"I must say, sir, you're looking awfully queer."
"I am quite well. Please continue."
It was still early in the afternoon when Pritchard returned to his drug hall on Collingwood Street, but he felt that it ought to be much later, that night ought to be falling to make sense of the exhaustion that he felt. He entered by way of the shop, and spent a foolish moment straightening the razor strops with the corners of the shelves, and tidying the bottles so that they stood shoulder to shoulder against the lip of the display cabinet. But suddenly he could not bear himself. He set a card in the shop window informing callers to return on Monday, locked the door, and retired to his laboratory. There were several orders set out upon his desk to be made up, but he gazed down at the forms almost without seeing them. He took off his jacket and hung it on the hook beside the range. He tied his apron about his waist, by habit. Then he stood and gazed at nothing. Mary Menzies' words had fixed him. They were his prophecy, his curse. "You have never been at peace with good." He remembered them. He wrote them down, and by doing so he made sure her words came true. He became the man whom she rejected because she rejected him, because she left. And now he was 38, and he had never been in love, and other men had mistresses, and other men had wives. With his long finger, Pritchard touched the shaft of a prescription bottle on the desk before him. She was 19. She was Mary Menzies in his mind. A phrase of his father's returned to him. "You give a dog a bad name, and that dog is bad for life." "Remember that, Joseph." With one hand on Pritchard's shoulder, and the other clasping a newborn puppy against his chest. The next day Pritchard dubbed the young thing Cromwell, and his father nodded once. Recalling the words, Pritchard thought, "Is that what I have done, to my own self, to my own fate? Am I the dog in my father's maxim, badly named?" But it was not a question. He sat down and placed his hands, palm downward, on the laboratory bench. His thoughts drifted back to Anna. By her own account, she had not intended to commit suicide at all, a claim that Pritchard believed was an honest one. Anna's life was miserable, but she had her pleasures, and she was not a violent type. Pritchard felt that he knew her. He could not imagine that she would try to take her life, and yet, what had she said? "It does occur to one now and again." Yes, Pritchard thought heavily, now and again it does. Anna was a seasoned opium eater. She took the drug nearly every day, and was well accustomed to its effects upon her body and her mind. Pritchard had never known her to lose consciousness so completely that she could not be revived for over 12 hours. He doubted that such a circumstance could have come about by accident. Well, if she truly had not intended to end her life, as she attested, then that left only two options.
Either she'd been drugged by somebody else, used for some nefarious purpose, and then abandoned in the Christchurch Road, or, Pritchard gave a slow nod, she was bluffing. Yes, she had lied about the resin. She could easily be lying about the overdose, too. But for what purpose? Whom was she protecting? And to what end? The Hokitika physician had confirmed that Anna had indeed partaken of a great deal of opium on the night of the 14th of January. His testament to this effect had been published in the West Coast Times on the day after Anna's trial. Could Anna have managed to fool the physician, or to persuade him somehow to give a false diagnosis? Pritchard considered this. She had been in the jailhouse for over 12 hours, over which time she would have been prodded and poked by all manner of men, and witnessed by dozens of others besides. She could hardly have fooled them all. True unconsciousness cannot be faked, Pritchard thought. Even a whore was not as good an actress as that. All right. Perhaps the drug had been poisoned after all. Pritchard turned his hands over and studied the walls on the pads of his fingers, each hand the mirror image of the other. When he pressed his fingertips together, they made a perfect doubled reflection, as when a man touches his forehead to a glass. He leant forward to look at the walls. He himself had certainly not altered the drug in any way, and he did not really suspect the Chinese man, Suk, of having done so either. Suk was fond of Anna. No, it was impossible that Suk might have sought to cause Anna harm. Well, that meant the drug must have been poisoned either before Pritchard bought it wholesale, or after Anna purchased her smaller portion from our Suk to imbibe at home. Pritchard's source for opiates of all kinds was a man named Francis Carver. He considered Carver now. The man was a former convict, and had a poor reputation as a consequence. To Pritchard, however, he had always been courteous and fair, and Pritchard had no reason to think that Carver might wish him or his business any kind of active harm. As to whether Carver bore ill will towards the Chinese, Pritchard had no idea. But he did not sell direct to the Chinese, he sold to Pritchard and Pritchard alone. Pritchard had first met Carver at a gambling house on Revel Street some 7 months ago. Pritchard was a keen gambler, and had been refreshing himself between games of craps, tallying his losses in his mind, when a scar-faced man sat down beside him. Pritchard inquired, as a pleasantry, whether the man was fond of cards, and what had brought him to Hokitika. Soon they fell to talking. When in due course Pritchard named his own profession, Carver's expression